From the Land de Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of February 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net. We'll hear from John Jones, crop scientist, agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He was speaking yesterday at the Crop Management Conference in DeKalb, and I asked him a bit more about nitrogen rates and the MRTN. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast, too, with Mike Tenura of T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Do visit us online at willag.org, willag.org, where today you will find a link to the All-Day Ag Outlook registration page. And the agenda for the whole of the day. We have a fantastic day planned for you. Please come and join us. The cost is just $40. Don't wait. Register now at willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.98, up a half cent. The May at 5.12¾, a half higher. In December, up 3. It settled $4.79½. The March soybeans, 10.45½, up 13¾. May, 10.63, up 14¾. And new crop November, up a dime at $10.61¼. Bean meal, $1.30 higher for the day. And the bean oil, 96 cents higher. Wheat futures, soft red at 5.85½, down 6½. The hard red at 6.07½, down 6¼ cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net now joins us. He's traveling again today. Where are you, Matt?
I've been over in Indiana, closer to Indianapolis. Went over and did a meeting for a group of growers over there this morning on the way back now.
So what did they ask you as it's related to their old crop and what they should do?
Well, you know, most of them, of course, are wanting to know how much more we're going to get out of this thing instead of how much should we sell. I'd rather them ask how much should we sell, but... you know, the unfortunate reality is a lot of times that's not how our minds work. But clearly, they were asking, in my opinion, just as much about new crop as what they were old. So I think with old, you know, we told them, hey, incrementally selling into the rally is what's always worked best for us. And it seemed like they certainly were mindful of that. And then on new crop, you know, we told them, fair amount of risk management before that acreage report there at the end of March probably makes a lot of sense. Nice to see this spring price on corn be a little higher than last year, but shoot, beans are going to be you know, a dollar or so under what we saw last year for spring price. So definitely a very interesting mixture there. Looking at the soy to corn ratio, you've got to think these acres could be awfully big.
Well, I have to ask about that, given the rally we saw in the soybean market today. Is that the bulls looking at the ratio and saying, wait a second, we need to move soybeans higher?
You know, that might be a little bit of it. There's no doubt that the current economics just make it tough for a guy to get super excited about growing soybeans, especially, you know, if they're in a situation where they don't have what you would call you know, an ideal APH. So I know a lot of growers that we've talked to have said, hey, you know, my APH is 10, 15, 20 bushel below where yours is at. You know, we understand that you guys are going to go corn to beans, beans to corn, but we just can't make that work. So there's no question that the economics look a lot different at 60 bushel than they do at 75. And I got to think in some of those areas where maybe the 60 might be closer to normal, you've got to assume that those guys are going to lean pretty hard on corn this year.
Okay, so then what have you been watching fundamentally in the marketplace? What are the drivers for you?
I think one of the main drivers for me, of course, is going to be what's the South American situation look like? And they've caught up. You know, they've caught up on harvest. They've caught up on safrinha planting. Argentina's normalized. Yes, there's going to be some losses there. We know that. But I think we've kind of cut that off for the time being, where that crop's probably not going to get a whole lot smaller than what it's been. Whereas the Brazil crop probably has a tendency to grow just a little bit from where it's been. We feel pretty confident that USDA might be just a smidge low there. The other thing I think that I'm watching is you know, how much safrinha crop gets planted. I think in some of those provinces, they're talking about a pretty big bump in acres percentage-wise, you know, just depending. And of course, the Brazilian growers have been paying attention to this market. They've seen higher prices as well. So, you know, I'm watching those things very closely. It's been very interesting to see these spreads actually widen out, whereas for the longest time, you saw a lot of bull spreading. At this stage of the game, though, it's pretty clear that the end user has certainly got their fill of corn, at least for the time being. They're trying to hold those guys off from delivering right now.
So if they're trying to hold them off, I know that's telling you that they want them to deliver later. Does that mean that they should?
That's a great question, Todd. I mean, you got to weigh your options. The first thing I would encourage people to look at is, you know, if I've got old crop corn sitting here, what's it worth versus what it was worth, you know, late harvest time frame? And for most growers, you're looking 80 cents to a dollar, in some places a little better yet, depending on basis situation. So certainly no one would fault a person for getting fairly aggressive in marketing some of that old crop. But at the same time, I understand that that basis looks better a little farther on out. So if that corn's at home, I kind of like spreading that out just a little bit. Maybe you go ahead and sell some of that on down the road for a 10, 15 cent better basis. I mean, I've heard of some of these folks that have had a 25% better basis for soybeans, you know, just from March to April. So that's a big deal. But as far as corn goes, most of them are centered around that 10 to 15 cent level. But that's still one heck of a additional amount of premium, if you will, just to hold on to that corn a little bit longer. So if I'm in the mind to sell, I think I'll probably sell some now, and I'll probably sell some a little better basis low.
On the soybeans, when you talk to producers about new crop, and they would be, I guess they would have less incentive to try to sell new crop soybean, should they?
Yeah, I mean, here's the easy answer, I guess, for me. And nothing's easy with marketing, Todd, but if you can't call it a profit right now, I just don't see any reason in locking in a loser this early in the year. There's no question that it's a very challenging time for soybean growers in here. And so, you know, with that being the case, if you know that your break even's, you know, $11 cash, which I've seen a lot of those, you know, and you're looking at 60 to 80 cents below that on a cash price, really there's no sense in getting super fired up just yet. I know that what forces us to make sales in those situations many times, you know, it's just the fear of the market moving lower. But you got to understand that there's still a lot of water to go under the bridge. I kind of feel like if these corn acres end up as strong as what some of us think they could be a bit of a booster, you know, for soybeans. I'm not saying beans are going to rally. Certainly that ratio will change from beans to corn. And maybe that's hinged 100% on corn moving lower. But you've got to think that a low 80s type number on acres for beans would be supportive. And maybe that's where we finally get an opportunity to see beans kind of get off the mat.
Hey, thank you much, Matt. We appreciate you being with us today, and safe travels.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. We're now joined by John Jones, soil scientist, agronomist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. He's been traveling on the crop management conferences and presenting on soil fertility, NP and K. I'm wondering, when you're thinking about these inputs, how farmers should consider them. I mean, they know that, of course, they need fertilizers. These are the foods that make a plant grow, but how should they consider them within the system?
I think one of the important things to think about is when we're assessing the performance or the outcomes that we get from our management decisions. Specifically, are we going to think of that farm, field, or grid point as a whole, or are you going to separate out what benefit was provided to the crop from the fertilizer, from the soil? And I think there's benefits from piecing that apart and saying, what is the amount of nutrients, or what are the amount of nutrients that were supplied by the soil versus the fertilizer? This is a little hard to do in a production context sometimes, but with a lot of capabilities of on-farm experimentation and farmers and agronomists continuously running their own strip trials, where I think there's benefits are when we say, this was the outcome of the exact input or nutrient applied, not just at the end of the day, bushels divided by pounds of N or pounds of N divided by bushels. If we can say what value the fertilizer actually had in relative to the soil, then we can start to identify and critically assess how we did for a management decision.
I suppose there are two ways that you could approach that. The easy way for nitrogen is to simply use the information that you and your colleagues have developed over the years in the MRTN or the in-rate calculator that anybody can look up online to come up with a nitrogen rate for their area, not particularly for their soils, but they don't vary that much, I guess, across portions of the state. On the other side, it's something much more closely related to the field. What are you talking about in relationship to these kinds of inputs and calculating them for your fields?
So certainly there's we provide guidance through the core nitrogen rate calculator tool, where the data and field research that that's been done here at the University of Illinois Extension team has produced to provide nitrogen rate guidelines and for different parts of the state, and that really has a very rigorous large data approach. What I was talking about at the specific crop management conferences this year were probably more on a field scale, assessing how you did after a management decision, or let's say assessing the performance of your management decisions based off of yield and profitability and nutrient loss outcomes. Now those things we can't all measure on a given production field, or we don't have the time and tools always to measure those on every farm field. But what we can do is take some of the research results that we're able to produce and say, this is about what we see for your soils in your region. For example, in the talks recently, we were discussing the amount of soil supplied nitrogen over decades of research within different parts of the state. That soil supplied nitrogen varies depending on your previous crop, but then also just what conditions you're seeing during the year. What we're trying to do on the scientific side is say, can we break apart the growing season and soil conditions to know and try to predict at least some directionality of how much N is going to be supplied by the soil. That's a challenging and quite a big obstacle and hurdle to approach, but it has value because we know the variability of soil-supplied nitrogen to our corn crops is what muddies the water when trying to find that specific nitrogen fertilizer rate that matches what the crop needs in excess of what the soil will supply.
What kind of experiments should farmers do, or what kind of results that they're pulling off their fields as it's related to yield and the combine data might they be able to deploy? I'm trying to figure out how a producer might go about what you're suggesting.
One of the options that we have and my research lab coordinates are on-farm nitrogen rate trials, where we do run experiments and provide the infrastructure to run experiments on farm fields with production scale equipment. This can be done with a precision on-farm experimentation bend, or it can just be done using strip trial designs. Both are flexible enough depending on what you would prefer. What those do then is provide an optimum N rate for your given field and soil, even different parts of the field. We can take soil and plant analysis to kind of maybe track or understand conditionally what your field is at for in terms of the amount of N that may be present or potentially available to your crop. But then essentially we see really the meat and potatoes of the results is what the crop response was to different nitrogen rates in your field. We can then say, kind of provide a calibrated optimum N rate for your soil and your field, but we have to do the research and get the data locally to find that out.
And finally, just to clarify the two sorts of things we're talking about, when you're doing on-field research, that really is specific to the field, and you can put different nitrogen rates out, and you can identify the differences within those rates and what's being supplied, roughly speaking, from the soils and what's being supplied from all of the other inputs. However, if somebody's using the MRTN and they're familiar with the long-running nitrogen formula, they're thinking, wait a second, I thought we stopped saying add 40 pounds of nitrogen for soybeans and that we won't need to use for the next year. And that's already built in to the MRTN is what I'm trying to say. And in fact, the numbers of the soil supplied are also already built in. So the MRTN uses those when they're calculating. And one final note, I think that I'm not sure is clear on the calculator itself, nor to those who use it, is that the number it gives you is total in applied, not the anhydrous rate, but all forms of nitrogen input.
Correct. When an optimum N rate or N rate that maximizes your return to nitrogen fertilizer is shown, it's the total amount of nitrogen per acre. That could be anhydrous nitrogen per acre, that could be UAN nitrogen per acre, but it's in a pound of N per acre unit. And yes, the soil supply is represented in that, and the amount of N that's usually seen from different previous crops.
In general, this will be a number that is lower than what producers would use. So if they see a 180, they have to take DAP out or MAP out from that, or all sources of N that they are applying to their fields.
Yes, so that's correct. For the way we calculate optimum N rates, we do consider any fall applied or spring applied nitrogen that's with your MAP or DAP products.
Thank you. Anything else before I let you go?
Just that we're always looking for collaborators around the state. Feel free to reach out to me if you're interested in working together on some on-farm research. We will travel and are excited to meet you.
If you're interested in getting hold of John, you can search out John Jones at University of Illinois. He should pop up. If not, you can always give me a call and I'll put you in contact with him so that you can have your own nitrogen rate trials on your farm. We're now joined by Mike Tenura. He's the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us today. I want to get started right away in South America, particularly in Brazil, where harvest is taking place for soybeans, and they're looking forward, even in the midst now, of planting the safrinha or second crop corn. What do we know about the climate and weather situation on the ground?
Well, Brazil is in a situation where they have below normal rainfall on the way over the next 10 days. And while that's a favorable setup for soybean harvesting and for second corn planting, this is not ideal for soybeans that are still sensitive. And there are many soybeans that are sensitive. They're primarily in the south and in the north, and then with some still in that central region needing a little more rain. So this story is going to play out over the next few weeks, but in our opinion, they would do better if they had more rain.
And then turn your attention to Argentina. What are conditions like there?
Well, Argentina is also in a little bit of a tricky setup. It's going to be hot over the next week. We can see that. And some of this heat is going to be pretty strong. They're already in the midst of one of their warmest, if not the warmest, February on record in these key corn and soybean regions, and this heat is going to be part of that. Now, with this heat, there's going to be thunderstorms. These are going to start up on Saturday and Sunday and then flow around the country over the course of next week. So we're thinking it will be wetter than normal in most corn and soybean areas as well. So kind of a mixed bag with, you know, unfavorable heat but favorable rains. Once we get beyond the next week, temperatures go back to normal, and we'll see some thunderstorms here and there. So we think that all the unusual weather is going to be packed in here over the next 7 days. And then once we get into March, things will quiet down.
In the broader perspective, across the whole of the continent, the crop has said to be still good by USDA. And there are some cuts, of course, in Argentina. Is your assessment that the crop remains and will continue to remain in okay shape?
Well, these are great questions, and they're difficult to answer. The reason that they're difficult is because all the weather that we've talked about to this point is happening in the last third of the growing season, maybe even the last 20%. And because of that, it's a little bit difficult to assess exactly what all of this means. Now, the only thing we would say is that if you get good rains in February and March in Argentina, you typically have pretty good crops, especially for soybeans. So this rainfall setup is pretty good, and they've had some nice rains over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, in the worst case scenario, we would say that conditions in Argentina are stabilizing. If you go into Brazil, this is where, again, we think that they need more rain. Parts of the south are very dry. Parts of the north are very dry. Parts of Paraguay are very dry, and that's adjacent to the south. And because of that, with this rainfall forecast that's coming up, we just need to see more if we're going to have, yields stay where they are today. So from wherever they are today, we don't think they're going to be able to hold up that well unless the crop that's being harvested is coming in way above expectation. So these are kind of the different things that everybody needs to think about. But what the answer is, you know, that remains to be seen. But we can just tell you that if it would rain a lot in Brazil, then we wouldn't have a lot to talk about right now.
In the United States, it's time to turn our attention to the winter wheat crop, particularly in Kansas. I'm wondering how it's made it through the winter months. We're not into spring just yet, but not so far away. And what your thoughts are on the winter kill potential there that may or may not have happened, and what the moisture levels are like for them in that western part of our world.
Well, that crop was way colder than normal over the last week. The average temperature was 33 degrees below normal in U.S. hard red winter wheat production over the last 7 days. I mean, and that is an incredible number to be that cold. Now, temperatures, even though they were below zero and even in the minus 10s and minus 20s on parts of the crop over the last few days, most of that really cold air was over the snow-covered areas, and that probably hasn't done very much, if anything, to most of that crop. The only thing we would say is that if it turns out months from now that there was significant winter kill damage, it probably was actually from what happened on January 21st. That was a time where it got below zero in most of the plains and there was no snow on the ground. This situation here, even though it was colder, had a lot more snow on the ground. And the areas that were snow-free in Oklahoma and Texas managed to stay mostly above zero. So we don't think there was a major impact from this cold weather that's now ending. The bigger story, though, in our opinion, is the lack of rain. Over the last 90 days, it's been drier than normal on about two-thirds of the U.S. hard red winter wheat crop, and that's near the highs of the last 10 years in February. The thing that's holding dryness back and the dryness story back is that it was very wet back in November. So we had a whole bunch of rain in November, and that basically masked what's been a pretty dry December, a pretty dry January, and now a pretty dry February. There's very little to no rain or snow on the way over the next 10 days. And this is just going to increase the pressure on this crop once we get into March and especially in April. The climate of this region is typically fairly dry until after about March 15th to 20th. That's where it starts to turn wetter in the plains. And then April is way wetter than March. So we're really going to start zeroing in on these forecasts, but not so much today or even next week. It's going to be what shows up again after March 15th to 20th.
Thank you so much. I appreciate all the good information.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd. Talk to you next time.
Indeed. We'll talk with you next week. That's Mike Tenura. He is at T-Storm Weather. That's tstorm.net online. Joined us on this edition of the Closing Market Report. Came to you from Illinois Public Media. Don't forget to go online right now and register for our All-Dag Outlook. That's Tuesday, March the 4th at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. I'm Todd Gleason.